This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Well, the growing season quickly coming to a close. So this afternoon, we'll look at the season we've had. We'll talk about what we might put into the ground now. And as all gardeners do, begin thinking about next spring. Listeners, I invite your fall gardening questions about herbs, vegetables, flowers, trees, and shrubs for Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland. Diane is the host of the WILL-TV program, Illinois Gardener. She's also a teaching associate in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. Chuck is also with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He's an extension specialist in the area of vegetable crops. Our guests are the co-authors of books for the general reader. Chuck, co-author of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. Diane, co-author of Perennials for the Landscape. Illinois Gardener, which you can see on our companion station, WILL-TV, on Thursdays at 7 p.m. and on Saturdays at 11 a.m., is now being aired on public television shows throughout Illinois, from Chicago to Carbondale. And you can hear the show's audio on this radio station on Saturday mornings at 6:30. That's right, Illinois Gardener.
That's really exciting about it, being on radio.
You're a regular franchise now.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. And she's also now a cover girl.
Yo.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Her picture's on the cover of Patterns magazine.
We want you to know it's going statewide. So if you're listening from Chicago or wherever, go on to the Illinois Gardener
website.
And it tells when each station has it running, because it's not at Thursday night at 7. Other places in the state.
Check your local listings,
exactly.
As they say. Okay. Now let me invite our listeners to join us.
Great.
And give us a call and join us with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, we want Chuck to begin this afternoon by telling us about his sweet potato adventures.
Well, yesterday and today we went out and dug the trials. There's 51 varieties replicated in 3 reps. It was about 950 feet of row.
Wow.
And
that's
a real dedicated crew
potatoes.
Got up about dawn the last 2 days, and we just grubbed them out of the ground, loaded them up, weighed them, counted them, and they're fantastic. We got a late start this year, and the season wasn't as hot.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't pile up a lot of heat units.
Mm-hmm.
So probably only about 60% of what they were last year. But last year I had, the one as big as your head, 8 pounds, 14 ounces.
Wow.
So I think we're more in the big ones this time are probably more in the 3-4 pound range. But that's still pretty big.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, the good news is it's a little easier this year on the back. Little bit.
Well, yeah, the carrying is, but you still have to bend over and pick them and put them in the bags.
What are some of your favorite varieties of sweet potatoes?
Well, that you can find, Beauregard, which came out of Louisiana State and is the standard of the growing area in Louisiana.
How do you spell that?
Beauregard.
Oh, Beauregard.
B-E-A-U-R-E-G-A-R-D. Just like
thinking.
Beauregard at,
yes.
at the plantation. It sizes up early. It's very productive. And best news, it's one that you can find in mail order catalogs and some of those places. So that's good. what else do I like? Hernandez, if you can find it, is just a real intense orange. Has to be full of carotene and all those good things. One that you probably can't find unless you go through Seed Savers or one of the rare plant places is one called Ivis, I-V-I-S, White Cream. It's very sweet, pretty productive. And
it's white?
And white. White skin, white flesh.
Interesting. Hmm.
Well, the antebellum South, the white ones were the only ones that were deemed fit to eat. They fed the orange ones to livestock or whatever. But The texture, it tends to be a little drier, and they're more like a like an Irish potato, a white potato, uh-huh. a regular potato.
But they're sweet.
But sweet.
Yeah.
So you, and you can do some interesting things. You could do like scalloped white sweet potatoes, which, you know, sort of have the texture of scalloped potatoes, but would be a little more on the sweet side. You might do, what, some nutmeg or something in them to make them kind of interesting in that sweet and savory kind of line.
Yeah. I was standing at the grocery store in front of the sweet potatoes not too long ago, and a woman was telling me, now, what you need to do is you need to take some of these dark red, you know, the darker red ones and some of the lighter ones mix them together. She said that was spectacular.
That is also very trendy, very good, tasty.
Yeah. So I never thought of doing scalloped sweet potatoes. Could you do what? I mean, I guess my repertoire is quite limited.
You could do sweet potato home fries. You could do sweet potato chips. That's really that's really
because
popular.
I'm who I am. I actually ferreted out and found a sweet potato recipe book. So I have a whole book of sweet potato recipes. So, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah. Well, give us another couple of examples then.
What else?
Sweet potato.
How about if I tell you a couple of things that I'm not real impressed with?
Okay.
Bush Puerto Rico has really short vines, and so it gets sold as a space saver for gardeners and whatever. Uh-huh. But it's very poor production, and as short as the vines are, the potatoes are long and strung out all over, so it's really difficult to dig without chopping them up. And I think a lot of people think that you can't grow sweet potatoes well in central Illinois, and it's because they're growing a variety that doesn't do very well. The other one is Vardaman, which is a little more productive, but still it's not up with the top of them and has some issues. I didn't notice it today so much, but sometimes when we dig it, as you pull them off the plant, the roots split. Just as you're pulling them off, it's like they're shocked and you get vertical splits on them, and then of course that messes with their keeping quality. Mm-hmm. So those two are very widely available, but they're not two that I would, if I were going to start a vegetable garden and could only grow one or two varieties, those would not be high on my list.
Because I've grown Vardaman and it did break off and split a lot.
Yeah, and another one it supposedly has really, really mediocre to poor flavor is Georgia Jet, which is very widely available. Productive is the Dickens. It was the tops in terms of production in a trial. But again, they split. They get rough surface on them. And you can probably do better than that one in terms
of... Good for microwaving for sweet potatoes, because I had a lot of production from Georgia Jet. It's really a pretty one.
Yeah, and they size up early. Yeah, even in this season, we had over 10 pounds of plant on Georgia Jet.
Wow, that's good.
So is there an extension bulletin on sweet potatoes? No doubt there is.
Not from here, probably.
Really not. Huh.
Not that I know of. Either LSU or North Carolina State, those are the two biggest producing states. Those are the two I would, if you go on their websites, you could probably get to something.
So all these sweet potatoes now that have been harvested, what happens to them?
Well, I try to make the department really happy.
Yeah.
Family and friends do well.
But the important thing is...
The local food banks.
Oh, that is great.
But the important thing is...
Would be Diane and Celeste?
No, I was saying... Well, yes, that is important. But you do save a third...
There's three replications.
For research.
The easy way is just to take... I actually mark the names on them in a different color, so I know which ones I have to put away, and just I've got to put those in warm, dry storage, so that I can use those to start next year's crop. So that's a third of them go there. Food bank gets some.
We
wised up and counted them as we were digging them this year because that's what's held things up in the past. I would have the weights, but then I'd need to go through each bag and count them, and. I'm so sick of them by the time I get done digging them that I usually put that off. And then it seems like it's always been after Thanksgiving when I start giving them away. And it's better now because pretty much next week I have the counts and the weights and can start to disperse the excess and get the others up to the storage location and be ready for next year.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland of the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. Fall gardening is our topic this afternoon here on the program. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let's take a call now from a listener in Terre Haute on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I've got a question about planting trees. We have a stream that we've done some work on, which has left an area that is moist almost all the time. I'm wanting to plant some trees or shrubs there, and I don't know what would be the best, what would work, and when is the best time to plant them.
Two types of trees immediately come to mind for near a stream, and you'll have to decide on which ones you think would look the best or plant them both. But river birches really like moist areas, and it has that beautiful cinnamon and brown bark that peels back or exfoliates. It's really pretty.
You can. There's a cultivar that has white. Heritage has white underbark, so you can substitute it for the white birches, which don't do well this far south.
And that Heritage birch, it was actually around the Smithsonian, one of the Smithsonian museums for the Native Indian exhibit. And Heritage is a tree from Jacksonville, Illinois. My former boss, Earl Cully's tree. So that's an excellent tree. Also, bald cypress. Those are the ones that provide produce knees to be able to breathe in swamps. And it's a beautiful lacy leaf, and then it drops its leaves in the winter. But it loves really moist areas well. And both of them are very pretty trees.
And when should they be planted?
I think you could probably plant right now. Don't wait very much longer, but October is for planting. That was a nursery theme one year, but you can plant trees now, but just don't wait very much longer. It's still good temperature of the soil. We haven't had a killing frost, and it will give the time for the roots to establish. Don't plant the tree too deep. Let it be, if anything, up maybe an inch, and then mulch it really well. But if you can plant it at the ground, you know, at the level that it was planted in the pot, or just a little bit higher, but you have to mulch it if you plant it a little bit higher. They're showing that the rooting is better at the top surface if you plant it just a little bit higher, but not extremely high. But October is great for planting trees.
Great. Thank you very much. Very useful.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Are there other plants that like lots of H2O that could go into a setting like that? I'm thinking
if it's a spacious area, something like a sycamore grows in the bottoms, would stand quite a bit of moisture.
For shrubs, I'm thinking hibiscus.
Red osier dogwood, yellow osier dogwood, some of those things will take quite a bit of moisture. Some of the less wild willow kinds of things love moisture.
Curly willow.
There's a rosemary willow.
And a yellow-barked willow. Also, the hibiscus I mentioned has to be the dull, fuzzier leaves. That's the hardy one, not the shiny, lobed, brightish green, middle green, because that's a Florida native.
Yeah. The Hawaii special.
Not the Hawaii.
And what
Florida
about
special
woodland plants? That might also be, you know, for around and nearby. I'm thinking of black snake root, I know, is a wonderful plant, but it's a water hog.
There's quite a few of the shade.
The blue flag iris grow along streams.
Yeah, right.
Lots of possibilities. Boy, that'll be lovely once that gets established.
Really will.
And there's some of the native and ornamental grasses like moist areas, too, that grew on the wet prairie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's take another call now. A listener in Urbana on line 1. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm noticing that we have poppies coming back up, the ones that are orange and spread underground. And I wanted to share them with a neighbor. Is it too late to share them now, or do I need to wait until they come back up again in spring?
You may sacrifice a little bit of flowering, but if you take enough soil around it, it probably won't hurt it too much. And poppies are lovely, just like the grape hyacinth. They go dormant midsummer and then show their leaves and their location in the fall. So that's very common in almost every year. So get that done fairly soon. If you don't get the entire root ball, you actually will have root cuttings that you've made, and you may have poppies that are back still in the area that you moved them from.
Okay, thank you.
And when you plant this late, you would want to mulch them once the ground freezes so that they don't freeze and thaw and get mm-hmm. heaved out of the ground.
And mulching would be 2 to 3 inches. I mean, you could put a little mulch on now just to keep moisture, but that would be maybe an inch. But then once it's a little heavier.
Once it's frozen, you want to keep it that way until it's really spring.
Oh, and one that does it so much is coral bells. They just, with freezing and thawing, they will actually come up out of the ground. They frost heave.
Yeah.
And they'll just be roots laying on top of the ground. So.
I've planted things in pots in the fall, and it looks like the ground spit them out.
It does.
Literally.
But it's that the freezing and the thawing just pushes them up each time.
Especially like down here where we have the clay loam soil, which is very fine textured and it expands and contracts more than like the sandy soil that I'm used mm-hmm. to at home, doesn't expand and contract quite as much, so heaving is not as big a problem in that type of soil.
And we don't get snow cover.
Well, there's that,
snow
too.
Cover really helps, but we don't always have that.
Yeah, helps to keep a more uniform soil temperature.
Next, we're going to go to Champagne, a listener on line 2. Hello.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One, I just became the proud mother of some pawpaw seeds yesterday evening. And I want to know what the best way would be to propagate them.
I'm pretty sure they need a stratification period. So,
you mean they need to freeze?
They need to be in cold, moist soil. And I also think maybe that they don't want to be dried out. So while they're still moist, I would, if you've got a place where you can plant them, mark it well, maybe mulch it, and
so I should put them in the ground now?
I think I would plant them in the fall, and then hopefully they'll germinate in the spring, because I think that would be the natural cycle of what they do.
Okay, and I'm told they're an understory tree?
Yeah, kind of forest edge understory. So, you know, if you don't have to make a super effort to put them in the shade.
That won't be any effort at all.
Okay, yeah, because Kentucky State has done a lot of research on pawpaw recently, and they grow them right out in full sun, and they are very productive in that situation. It's not where they naturally occur, but
They will grow in.
They will grow as an understory.
Because in the summer I have full shade in my backyard.
Yeah, well, they're probably less productive with less light, but certainly will survive in that location probably.
All right, and then I have some potted mums and asters that I bought and am planning to plant in the next day or two. So do I need to mulch them really well at this point, or what do I need to do?
After you plant them, and again, don't plant them much deeper than what they already are, then I would put at least an inch of mulch, and then you can add additional mulch as you find that it's freezing more. When the flowers are past, go ahead and just deadhead or remove the flowers, but don't remove a lot of the stem. We found that with garden mums, that the more stem you leave, it has the effect of mulching the crown and keeping it so it doesn't die out.
Okay. Right.
So just remove the top flowers, and that takes some of the weight and keeps them from lodging over or you know, really looking bad. But just remove, you know, I remove maybe the top third. Sometimes I remove more because I bring them in as cut flowers, but don't remove it all the way down to a 1 inch of, you know, the stem.
Don't mow them.
Don't mow them, right,
okay.
Exactly.
The same?
Asters, I would say just this year trim them back, but after they are done flowering any other year after they're established, you can just trim them back to the crown, but not this year just because you're getting them established.
Should I deadhead them?
Yes, go ahead and deadhead. If you don't deadhead asters, you will have this year 2 asters, next year 22. They really are prolific, and I am living proof of it. But
yes,
and,
they're meadow invaders naturally.
Oh
aren't
my, they are something. But if you want that and have the area, go for it. But and then you'll get an interesting mix of colors too.
Oh really?
But just don't leave very many to seed if you don't have the room for them to come up.
They are native, right?
The original ones are, you probably have some cultivars, but those are cultivars of the native ones, and there are two types, a shorter and a taller. And the native ones tend to be more like 5 and 6 feet, but the cultivars have been bred to be a little bit shorter.
It's one of those things that a lot of the cultivars are developed in Holland and Germany and so parts of Europe, but it's a native U.S. plant.
Mm. Well, they also do differently in our climate. To wit, the dandelions, which are a garden flower in Europe.
Exactly. They love dandelions.
Well, they weren't an accidental introduction to North America. They brought them on purpose because of their medicinal value and their food value.
Uh-huh.
And then they escaped, and you know, we think of them as a pernicious lawn weed, but...
But they really admire them.
They still have medicinal and ornamental properties. It's just that they're awfully good at growing.
And in Europe, they have the cutest little white daisy in the lawn. And I comment, how beautiful that little white flower is. And they said, oh, those are terrible weeds. So, and they don't grow here. They're not hardy.
All right. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Diane Nolan and Chuck Voigt. We're talking about gardening. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. If you'd like to talk with Diane and Chuck, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Is there something that we can do to prevent the mums from getting so leggy? Why does that happen?
Oh, yes, there absolutely is. When the mums start up, and I'm ready for that question, and they get about 4 to 6 inches high, and this will maybe still even be in May, you want to pinch them or take them back an inch or more, and you pinch them to shape, so you round it down. You may pinch off more if they're growing
we
taller
ones.
We haven't
been pinching correctly, I think.
Just take them at least an inch, but can be more.
And if you have an older planting that's getting big and broad and is more than you want to pinch one stem at a time, you can actually take head shears and buzz them back just mm-hmm. that way. And the rule of thumb I used to know was you could do that up to about the 4th of July and then
stop. That's still right, because you need – it's the certain day length it needs – to have vegetative growth to then be able to produce flowers after 8, 9, or 10 weeks. When you take those cuttings, those prunings, the pinchings, are actually cuttings that will root. So anytime you take off a 2 or so inch cutting, you put it back into soil and keep it moist, you now have plants that will root within 2 to 3 weeks, and you can put them elsewhere around your garden.
Or pot them up and delight your friends.
Yes.
Boy, now we've got some really good bargain information here because those are cuttings that you're just taking from one plant.
Exactly.
And then the asters if you've got a bald spot.
Oh, yes.
Learning to propagate plants is a wonderful thing because
you
don't have to buy 30 of them to cover an area. You can buy one and within a year propagate them
and have the same effect. Thank the two of you for how our lavender is doing so
excellent.
Well. And we took your advice and made those little, pulled them over and stuck them down and bingo.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Layering is wonderful.
Okay. Well, let's take another call. Line 4, our toll-free line, a caller calling in from Oakwood this afternoon. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I got a question for you. I was thinking of trying to grow, I hope you haven't covered this, sorry, trying to grow some kale this winter. What's the story on that, and what should I look for and be careful of?
Well, this is the time of the season. Are you going to buy it as plants?
Yes, I thought it would.
Well, this is the time. And it's really beautiful to start them and plant them out probably about, I would say, 8 to 12 inches, depending upon if you want them to be closer or not. You can use the new leaves in salads. They actually, as long as it's been out of the greenhouse for a while, you know, make sure it hasn't had anything used on it. I actually had ornamental kale, and you can grow ornamental cabbage as well, but the kale is a little frillier, wouldn't you say, Chuck?
Yes.
Has more colorations and...
Are we... You're talking about the ornamentals, or are you talking about just regular kale?
Just regular kale to grow out in the garden.
Okay, I'm talking about the ornamentals. Oh, okay. Let me finish my thought. I had an ornamental kale that overwintered and then, you know, just kind of languished through the summer, and now it's looking great this fall. So it's been over a year. But the ornamental kales are edible.
Right,
I still use them for salads.
And usually they'll flower in the spring if they make it through the winter. Kale is the most winter hardy of the group. You're probably not going to be able to find started regular eating kale at this point. So maybe
go ornamental.
Go ornamental this time, and next year, late June or so, plant some kale seeds and grow your own little transplants. You can keep them in a cell pack until, you know, some other room opens up in the garden, and get them transplanted maybe in August or so, and they should just be very productive through the fall. As I just told Diane, they're the most winter hardy of the whole cabbage family. So with a little protection, put some leaves around them or something, you can very often get them to come through. And they might produce a little bit in the spring, but they are biennials, and if they come through well, they'll flower and make new seeds in the second year. But
okie dokie. Well, thanks. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's take another call. Listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. Do you have any advice on getting tea roses ready for the winter?
Tea roses ready for the winter. Now, most folks say, you know, they're not using those rose cones anymore, the plastic ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the best wisdom out there now is to really mound up leaves, or maybe leaves with a little bit of a loose potting soil.
Compost would work well.
Compost would be lovely, too. And just mound it up about 8 to 10 to 12 inches into the crown, and then let the top have at it.
And like the chrysanthemums, I would probably not do much pruning on them in the fall. Wait and see what survives the winter, and then start your pruning in the spring by taking out anything that's obviously dead, and then kind of see where fresh new buds are coming, and then prune for effect once you've got the dead wood out.
Because as soon as you prune, it seems like it will then die back 4 to 5 inches below where you pruned, which if you hadn't pruned, it may not have done anything.
And same way with the mums, it makes that kind of a dead air space with the old stems and stuff that just seems to
protect
what's below it.
Hmm. Okay, I want to thank the listener for her call. Let's go next to Monticello. Line two, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I just established some blueberries, and I've read that you need to mulch them, and then other places say, no, you don't need to mulch them. What would I do? Should I mulch them here in central Illinois? Blueberry bushes?
Blueberry bushes love an organic mulch. They have very shallow roots, and they like to be kept moist but not wet, so a mulch helps with that. Bob Skirvin, who is our small fruit specialist, shows slides in my class of an experiment they had out, and the plants that had the organic mulch are like as tall as I am or taller, 6, 7, 8 feet tall, and the ones right next to them in the row that didn't have mulch are little bitty scrawny things that are about knee high, and it's really incredible. Pine needles is good. Decomposes and comes out on the acid side of the pH realm would be good. So pine needles, maybe shredded oak leaves, some of those forest floor kinds of things.
I've got lots of pine needles. So.
Right. Okay. Pine needles are excellent, and you wouldn't want to do like fresh wood chips or something like that that's going to suck all the nitrogen out of the ground.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Can we talk about pine needles for just a moment?
Certainly.
Getting quite a few questions about what's wrong with the pine trees. Those needles are yellowing, and are they dying? That is the second year growth, and it is so natural. It's just really ugly. Some of the trees are really ugly and really obvious this year, but they're going to drop down and mulch themselves, and it will be fine.
Evergreen doesn't mean the needles stay on forever. Yeah. It means the new growth
Something
stays green. But
on there is green.
But either 2-year-old needles or 3-year-old needles, depending on what the pine is, do turn yellow and fall off the tree at the end of the season.
And it's really obvious this year.
Yeah. Well, they probably had good growth last year, so you have a nice elongated section that
was. That is exactly what it is.
Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
I'd like to plant a couple apple trees. When's the best time to do that? And can I plant any kind here that I want?
That's a good question.
Probably like planting other trees, you could still do it now, but I wouldn't delay much longer. And I would probably water it in well and then mulch it again so that you don't get freezing and thawing problems. If you can't find what you want now, early spring is good. You can mail order, get exactly whatever variety you want. It comes in bare-rooted, but they've been stored well. If you plant them right away, they seem to work very well. I've almost never lost a quality fruit tree.
Bare-root has so little weight to it. People just don't know how great it is to buy in bare-root, and they're so much quicker to plant than
right.
Lugging around the big
and
ball,
first thing in the spring, deciduous trees seem to work extremely well that way. So in apples, we can grow just about anything. Our season is a little on the short side for some of the extremely late things, like Granny Smith, I think, has a little trouble getting fully ripe here and some of the really late things.
What about Honeycrisp?
Honeycrisp, we grow Honeycrisp out at the fruit farm here. It does fine.
Okay, and you said to buy a bare root?
Yeah, they come without soil on the roots. Like it typically that's what
spring.
You get if you go to one of the major mail order nurseries that have, you know, a big line of modern and antique apples and whatever.
Okay.
And you can get them on dwarfing root stocks or standard root stocks or whatever.
And what do you have a website you could recommend?
Well, the one that's closest is Starks. I mean,
yeah.
They're just right across the border into Missouri.
Okay.
They have a lot.
Miller's in New York has a real good collection of some of the antique things, but they also have modern ones as well.
Miller's, M-I-L-L-E-R-S?
Yes.
Okay, great.
And
Thank
they come
you.
Packed
You're
in
welcome.
Moist sphagnum moss usually. They're,
right.
You know, they don't dry
yeah,
out. They
dig them in the fall, put them in moist cold storage through the winter, and then ship them out first thing in the spring. And because it's so humid and cold in the storage, it seems to work. I've been up at Bailey Nurseries mm-hmm. in St. Paul, and they have these gargantuan warehouses that they put them in. I think the new ones they were building were like 6 million cubic feet, and they literally stack them floor to ceiling in there, and they move a lot of material that way. And because
it's really cool and clammy in there, and it doesn't change.
And because there's so many of them, and it's because the temperature is so constant and cold, they hold really well that way. And like Diane said, they pack the roots in something to keep them moist, and it really keeps the shipping down, because if you try to ship anything in a pot, even if it's in a really light mix, it becomes a
And I think
a problem.
That's an unused resource for a lot of people. I've done evergreens, bare root. I don't get them as big, but they're very reasonable in price, and you can buy 5 or 10 for the cost of one, and you can get those locally as well. I bet there's bare root at our local places as well, some of the trees.
Well, a lot of the things that you see in pots at nurseries and garden centers, they bought bare root, and they just potted them up and put them out on the nursery sales floor. So mm-hmm. You're paying them extra for doing that work, which...
And lugging the weight around, too.
In terms of whether it's going to be successful to you, it really would have been as successful if you'd gotten the bare root plant and planted it.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland, were talking about gardening. Both of our guests are with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. Chuck is co-author of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest, and Diane is co-author of Perennials for the Landscape. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, when are we going to start to see parsnips? Right now, huh? You think?
Well, they're there.
Yeah.
When the soil gets a little cooler, they'll be even sweeter and nicer.
Yeah, and that's why I think they're waiting. We haven't had a real, real cold
Ed says
spell.
It's coming.
Well, but the soil temperature lags behind the air temperature, and because the parts you want is in the soil, once the soil gets down in the low 40s, mm-hmm. even upper 30s, that's when the parsnips really develop that sweetness as sort of an internal antifreeze. And then it, when we harvest them, it's very tasty for us, but that's not really what it's about in terms of the plant.
And also leaks. Leeks are starting to be harvested.
Yeah, my baby leeks are sizing up pretty nicely
Brussels
now.
Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's take another call. A listener on line one in Champaign, I think, is our next caller. Good afternoon. Hi. Champaign?
Yes.
Hi.
Champaign. I have a question concerning propagation of seeds from plants that I grow in my garden. What's the correct procedure for saving seeds? And also, does the seeds have to come from a mature, say, like a tomato, or can you take it from a green tomato and still propagate?
Well,
go check.
The seeds would be best from a very ripe tomato.
Okay.
Maybe a mature green one if you were desperate to save them and it had already eaten all the ripe ones and they were going to freeze tonight. You might get some that would be viable, but they're going to be stronger and more reliable if they're from a very almost overripe fruit would be ideal. And it varies from plant to plant how you would process them. From a non-hybrid tomato, usually what they recommend is that you squeeze out the seeds and the gel into a jar with water, let it rot for 2 or 3 days. The bad seeds will come to the top with the scum. The good seeds will sink. Then you pour off the scum and the water, dry them out, and something about that process seems to clean up disease and whatever, and that's the recommended way. Personally, they smell so bad. My tendency is to cut corners and just squeeze them out onto a paper plate or something and just let them dry that way, and I haven't had real bad results that way, but the purist at Seed Savers Exchange mm-hmm. in those places would tell you to do tomato seeds that way. Other things are a little simpler, but the thing you do have to remember is that hybrid varieties won't come true from seed. They'll segregate back into things that look like either parent or neither parent. So you have to deal with open pollinated varieties of things that will come true from seed.
Okay, I appreciate your information. Thank you.
Okay, next we go to Muhammad. Line two, hi.
Hi, I have two very large 6-foot-tall burning bushes that we had to relocate when we started rebuilding our house, and they've been plopped out in the middle of the yard. They have a root ball on them, but they're sitting in sort of a shallow fill right now. I'd like to put them back in the ground before the freeze. How should I treat them?
Well, I would start doing that right away. And you can move them to where you need it to be. Make the hole bigger than that root ball that they're in now, and then backfill, loosen some of the soil up. And maybe even, I take a potato fork and even loosen lower than where it's going to be. So it's the $100 hole for the $10 plant strategy.
Used to be a $10 hole for a $5 plant.
How
things have inflated.
It's inflation now. So, but anyway, make sure that you have a big enough hole and then just have your backfill loosened. Sometimes I amend it with compost or, you know, but it doesn't really need to be. We have such great soils here. And then make sure that you have it filled in enough that when you put the root ball in, that is level with the rest of your hole and won't sink in appreciably. So you may even want it a little bit higher. So when it sinks in, settles, it's right at the ground level. And then backfill it. And I water in the hole, actually. I water down into the hole. If it's not, you know, once it's in place, then I water before I fill it in a little bit. And then backfill it. And again, some mulch so that it will be a constant temperature, soil temperature, and then a little bit more after it freezes, and it should be fine.
Yeah, they're pretty tough.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Next we go to Robinson, Illinois, line four. Hi.
Yes, any thoughts about keeping a very large Brugmansia, which used to be called Datura, indoors over the winter?
I just went over to my neighbor's yesterday and saw hers that was 10 feet wide by about 6 feet high. Now, what they do is they trim it back a lot, and she stores it in her basement where the window, you know, it gets humidity and has light. But to bring it in to keep it going, you just need the space. It's probably going to lose a few leaves, won't it, to go into an interior climate? Yeah.
The only space I have to keep it has practically no light, a north enclosed porch. I don't care for it to be beautiful over the winter, just to keep it alive.
What's the temperature of the enclosed porch?
Oh, 45, 50.
Oh, well, if it's chilly, it might stay dormant, and a bright lighted chilly area is better for a lot of those tender perennial things that we have to bring in because they do stay dormant and don't try to grow, which is where they get messed up with lack of sunlight is when they're trying to grow and they get leggy and exhaust their resources because they're photosynthesizing less than they're respirating.
But I think I would trim it back a little bit, make sure that you know it has some size but not the entire thing, because once it comes inside and it's at 45, it's going to start dropping leaves and flower petals. So it's okay to trim it back.
Yes. What you want to save is the main part of the trunk and the roots, because the rest of it will come back very quickly once it's outside in the warmth again.
Great. Thank you very much.
And next we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hi. Line 3?
Hello.
Champaign, hi.
Hi, I'm wondering if there's a type of pomegranate that you could actually grow in the Midwest.
Hardy pomegranate.
I saw them growing at the National Arboretum in Washington, D.C., but
that's maritime.
I think they're climate. Probably, what, two zones warmer than we are.
I think they are 7, at least 6B.
And so they had hardy pomegranates there, but I would be pretty pessimistic. Maybe if you treated them, you know, like some of the people treat figs, where they dig up part of the root ball, lay them down, mulch the whole plant, and if you're really desperate to try it, you might, you know, seek out the hardiest variety that you can find, and then really invest in some audacious practices.
It would be a fun experiment, though, for just one plant. And if you had a microclimate where I have one that's sort of on the east side of my house and it's protected from the north and the west winds, and some things seem to do better there, but you could certainly try it. I've seen kiwis, you know, there's hardy enough kiwis in southern Illinois.
Mm. Oh, really?
And they were growing them in experiments at SIU, so it'd be worth trying. You know, with standard roses, they do that as well. They lay them over so that stem won't die back.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that.
Well, report back when you have good well, good or bad results.
Yeah, drop off some pomegranates at the station here for
in a smoothie.
It'll probably be about an inch wide.
Yeah, I think the hardy ones are not as big as we're used to.
Right.
Right.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, good luck with that. That sounds like that would be a lot of fun. Well, we're coming down right here to the wire, and Chuck, maybe you would tell us what's coming up in the future for Herb Day and Organic Gardening Day.
Organic Gardening Day, I was hoping you would ask, is coming up November 8th. We still have plenty of room for people. The number to call for that is 333-7738, area code 217. I said that backwards. So it's 217-333-7738.
It is so great.
Carla has taken over for Carol, if you've ever come to one before, but don't be put off by that. She's just a different secretary doing the same job. We have Lee Reich is coming. He's going to talk about uncommon fruits that you can grow organically. He's going to talk about fear-free pruning.
Fearless pruning. I love that title.
He's got that going on. We've got a two-woman tag team that are going to do a cooking demonstration.
Fun.
One of our grad students is going to talk about companion planting.
Award-winning graduate student Abram.
And I'm forgetting somebody, and I Hopefully they're not listening.
Great.
And it's going to be great. We're going to have great fun. The chef is working with local organic producers, so we're going to have not just an organic lunch, but an organic locally produced lunch. So
and, you know,
come and be involved.
I was slow to pick up on this, but at the city tent at the market at the square, every week they have a recipe using what's available at the market put together by some area chef. And
fantastic.
I didn't know about that. I just thought, you know, I'll stop and visit with those folks and, you know, have a cup of coffee. But then Lisa there, the goddess of the fair, the farmer's market, she handed me this. And I said, wow, this is great.
That's a wonderful service.
Yeah. So if you're at the market, look for that. And also look for Diane on television, Chicago to Carbondale. Mm-hmm. Check your local listings for Illinois Gardener, and now you can hear the program, the audio, on this radio station on Saturday mornings at 6:30. Illinois Gardener on AM 580, Saturdays at 6:30.
All gardeners are up at 6:30
on
Saturday.
You betcha.
Or not. Maybe.
Maybe not after they've done heavy-duty sweet potato digging. But,
that's right.
Okay.
I watched the sunrise over the vegetable research farm this morning.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Well, he's earned a couple of sleep-ins this weekend, don't
right.
you think? Okay, very good. Well, there we will leave it. And our thanks to Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt.